Are you one of the millions of people who realize that to be successful in today's marketplace, you need to be totally focused? And yet the very focus that can make you successful also places at risk three of your most precious assets, your health, your family, and your soul. This is what David Fabricius is asking, and he says it need not be like this because the solution is found in the Daily Seven, the secret to living a life of balanced excellence. We can all achieve all we ever wanted without losing everything that we have by practicing these seven life choices every day. You don't need to lose your family, health, or soul on your way to success. You don't have to be building an empire to want to make your life a great success. You can be a mother, a father, a friend, a salesperson, a business person, or a great leader. If you're a workaholic or the spouse of a workaholic, then listen to this show. There may be something here especially for you. I'd like to welcome David Fabricius, author of The Daily Seven, The Secret to Living a Life of Balanced Excellence. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. M. Thank you so much.
So I'd like to know what compelled you to write The Daily Seven, because it's such a well-contained guide to living a life of excellence. What made you do that?
Dr. Anne, it was massive pain in my own life and also the pain that I observed in my clients across the world. I'm very blessed and fortunate to work one of the world's most accomplished groups of business people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a network of global business leaders. And these people are incredibly successful in financial terms. And also many of them excel in many, many other areas of their lives. But I continuously hear from them the same old question. David, how can I be as successful at home as I am in business?
Mm-hmm.
How can I create more balance in my life? And I looked at them and say, gosh, don't ask me. You know, we are birds of a feather. I'm as bad as you.
Uh-huh.
At the height of my career, Dr. Anne, I was traveling through 23 international airports on three continents in two hemispheres in 1 month.
Oh, my gosh. Did you have a personal life?
Indeed. You know, that's the question. So anybody who looks at that will just know that that is excessive travel. So I said to these folks, listen, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started searching for this because I could feel the increased pain in my life. I saw the pain in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that pain and out of that search, almost a decade later, the book was born.
Uh-huh. What changes did you make in your life to birth this book?
Well, the first thing I think I need to just say, Dr. Anne, is that please forgive the tears in my words as I speak sometimes about this. For me, really, writing this book was like cutting my soul and letting it just bleed into the words.
Mm.
And, you know, when you have that kind of pain,
mm-hmm.
You are compelled to change. I think that pain is the greatest precursor and the greatest catalyst for all human transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, but that is what it is. So for me today, it is not so much anymore about winning another award. It's not so much about planting my flag on the highest ground of my professional industry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It is about being as best I can possibly be, but within a framework where I also honor and respect all the other vital parts of life and not neglect my health or my soul or people I am with. You know, so often on our way to success, we begin to just collect more trophies. Make more money. It's so tempting, it's so seductive
mm-hmm.
just to go for another bigger and bigger project. And in the process, we end up losing our most precious assets, our families,
mm-hmm.
our health, and our soul.
Absolutely.
Or at least we place them at risk.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, how many marriages do you know of that have split because of lack of attention, lack of having that quality time? I was reading through your book and was very moved by especially the chapter on sharing ourselves, you know, chapter 6 in regards to really creating that family time. Because I too can find myself extremely busy in my life, as we all do at certain times, whether we're doing what you're doing, globetrotting and doing extremely high-powered workshops and seminars and lectures, or whether you're simply, you know, living a simpler life, still, we don't always take care of the most important things in our life. We don't look at what really needs nurturing. For me, the family is always first.
Indeed, and often, you know, often we are selfish. Truly, I think what it should be, if we look at priorities and values, one should say that your divine connection, your connection with God, wherever you perceive God to be, based on your culture, you know, your values and so forth, that should be our highest priority. And certainly after that, family should be right up there, right just below your divine connection, your connection with God. It's your connection with your family.
Mm-hmm.
And then only thirdly, it is your professional connections, your business, your professional or business relationships. But so often as business people, we tend to put the business right up there, and it becomes all-consuming, and we almost become selfish in that success.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's neglect in all the other areas that in the end bring tremendous, tremendous pain. You and I both know that the greatest pain anybody could ever experience is in the area of relationships. But if the whole thing of family and relationships is handled well, this can also be the place of our greatest joy.
Absolutely. And then you get the support that you're looking for, too, which helps you to go even further.
Indeed, indeed. It does strengthen you. It's all interconnected.
So with all of the corporate entrepreneurial business achievers that you've worked with worldwide, and I know that you've worked with the top 3% of these beings on the planet, would you say that this is what they struggle with the most?
Well, you know, when I ask these groups of people, and I'm fortunate to work with small groups, so it's quite intimate, 100, 200 people or so at a time of these high achievers. You know, they don't come in groups of thousands. Having said that, I have worked with very large audiences, and response is very much the same. But certainly amongst the high achievers coast to coast here in the United States of America, when I ask them about the seven, they say, David, I am a master at five. I'm outstanding, extraordinary, exceptional at five.
Mm-hmm.
And they may differ slightly, but for most people in general, I think health is seriously a problem. If you look at people in the United States, certainly the neglect of health is a big problem. Not eating correctly, not exercising adequately, not de-stressing adequately, not detoxing, cleansing, all of those things. So the area of health, I find, is a commonly neglected one amongst workaholics in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you know, also a lack of sleep and so forth. Secondly, I would say often it is family. Having said that, this group of highly accomplished people who belong to this network are very conscious to make time of family, and they certainly make a tremendous effort. But in general, a lot of successful business people neglect family, working very long hours, traveling a lot. And then the third one, which recently I had some communication with Paul J. Myers. He's the original founder of Success Motivation Institute.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a man who has sold more than $2 billion worth of his products worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate to write back and forth with him and receive some gifts from him and so forth. And he specifically said that in his view, the one that is most commonly neglected globally, and again, remember, this is a man with businesses across the world. He's got something like 40 different companies all around the globe.
Uh-huh.
So he certainly has some experience in being, you know, in his advanced years as well. He's been around a long time.
Yes.
It is the whole area of spirituality.
Uh-huh.
So based on his many years of observation, and I would say also certainly 30 years of observation on my side, certainly the area of spirituality is tremendously neglected amongst the average person.
Now, is that because he's saying this because now he has found his own spirituality and he's reflecting back upon his life and he realizes how much he had neglected it?
No, I think he personally is very strong in that, and therefore because it's a high value for him,
uh-huh.
you know, he noticing whether it's a high value for others or not.
Uh-huh.
It is just something I think he is tremendously focused on. But in general, if you ask people who have tremendous experience and have traveled extensively, they would say that certainly health, family, and then, of course, spirituality are commonly neglected areas amongst busy people today.
So writing this book for you is obviously to help all of us who have busy lives, and to be able to incorporate the most important aspects of our life so that we can have a more balanced, fulfilled love, joy, success in all areas.
Oh, of course. You know, the foundation for all of this, Dr. Anne, really is your character. It's really what you are all about in your core, in your essence. You know, if you look on the back of the book, on the back cover, it says there, to be a great leader, great business person, great parent, great sales professional, great friend, or great citizen, you must first be a great person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so really that is the foundation. So all, I think, personal growth should be whole person development that looks at every area of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you first become a better person, you cannot really expect to improve much or elevate your life much in any particular area. It all begins from the foundation of being a great human being first.
So let's look at being a great human being, because I know many of our listeners will say, well, I think I'm already a great human being. So how do you characterize a great human being?
Well, you know, the Jewish folk in Yiddish, they have a word, a mensch.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a real mensch, it means that you operate from a perspective of heart, of love, of caring. You know, love being the greatest of all those. So certainly for me, being a great person is that your intent in life, your predominant motive, and hey, we're all going to fail. We're all going to have slip-ups along the way. But for most of the time, that you operate and do everything you do from a place of love,
mm-hmm.
and not from a place of fear or greed or lust, as seductive as those things can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is very easy to go into any of those. But ultimately, if you operate mostly from a space of love, I would say you are then a great person. Mm-hmm. Because everything else will then work from there and flow from there.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, obviously, that one of the most important things in life is to know what we're doing here. Why are we here? I mean, we hopefully, each and every one of us is asking that question at some point in our lives. Finding the answer to that isn't always so easy. And so you've written a chapter, you've dedicated a chapter to that, the importance of finding our life purpose. Let's take a look at that and how you would guide your audience to find their life purpose.
Right. I think we are all born with an innate desire to know why we are here. I mean, those are the great questions of life.
Yes.
Who am I? Why am I here?
Right.
You know, where am I going? Where do I come from? Those are the classic, the traditional great questions of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I see some people will live a lifetime of search and will be sincere seekers and still end up not knowing. It seems like they are spiritually blind and spiritually deaf, and they just cannot see their vision or hear their calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember an old joke about this, about somebody who went all the way to India to an ashram, mm-hmm. to find him or herself,
mm-hmm.
and then came back and said, well, that was an interesting experience, but I'm not sure whether I found myself. And the other person, the observer, then just commented and said, you know what, just prior to you going there, I just returned from there. And I can tell you that you are not there. You know, so the lesson in that is, you know, yes, it's fantastic. Do go to India. I've been to India. I did a fire walk there at the Taj Mahal Palace. You know, what a great experience. What a country to go and see, a culture to just be absorbed in, and to have the new smells and tastes and sounds around you are so wonderful. I mean, you have made this trip, you know.
Uh-huh.
But don't go there just to find yourself. You can find yourself wherever you are. And the key truly, Dr. Anne, as you know, is being in relationship with the spirit, with a higher being, with the higher source, with, as I would prefer to call it, God.
Yes.
You know, that is really where it all begins. Now, I have searched all over the world and consulted with all the great gurus that I could possibly access, you know, from Japan to India to across America and beyond. And for most, I see that most people are as confused as an African goat in New York when it comes to their life's purpose.
Even these masters? Even the masters?
Well, you know, I would not say all the masters, but some of these people with all respect and some of these authors, and I'm not criticizing anybody in particular here, mm-hmm. are offering people models. And even in my book, there is a model. And these models are useful as a bridge, Dr. Ann,
mm-hmm.
but they are not the real thing. Even the one in my book, with all honesty, is only a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps people to understand, because many people say, well, I need a process. I need some analytical tool to do this.
Right.
But ultimately what it is very, very simple. And that is that you commit your life to being in a close personal relationship with spirit,
mm-hmm.
with God, with the higher power, whoever you perceive that to be.
I have something to interject here.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
And that is that I agree with you that we will never find ourselves unless we first connect with spirit within ourselves. But what I have found is that in the West, it isn't as easy to find that path into ourselves without tools that are time-tested and proven to be successful tools. That there are many doctrines that that will mislead and misguide. So that, I mean, I did go to India. I did find myself completely and utterly. And it was because, I guess partially because of that trip to India. So maybe I'm seeing it from a slightly different perspective here. I understand what you're saying. And at the same time, in the West, I couldn't find the support that I needed to do what I did in India. Because there, it was so steeped in finding yourself. In the West, it's not. It's more about making money. And the money has been our guru and our God. And so, I think it may be harder here.
That is a valid point. I absolutely agree and accept on that. Within the Western culture, you are so right, Dr. Ann, there are so many distractions
mm-hmm.
where that if you go with the intent to find your life's purpose, and you go and seclude yourself, which is one of the next steps that I wish to mm-hmm. discuss here, you go into a place where there is a completely different, more spiritual environment, a different support system,
mm-hmm.
and dedicate yourself towards that process. Absolutely. You know, and whether that be in India, or whether you go sit in the Rocky National Mountain
yes.
Park, or
right.
wherever it may be. You know, this is true, but ultimately it's going to be wherever you are.
Yes.
You know, and therefore I say, you know, it will not be in a particular location. It will rather be in your intent and in what you're doing with your own heart that will make that difference.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly, you know, the thing is then to say, let me connect with the divine and then let me fast. That is normally, I find, a very powerful way to also connect you more spiritually, to also get more clarity, not to the point of extreme fasting. This may include some green juice fasting, or for a period of time, just water fasting, your health permitting. But, you know, it doesn't have to be extreme, but certainly fasting can be very, very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And then during this time of fasting, prayerfully asking and listing, for insight and say, what are my birth gifts? Now, a lot of people will say, well, I don't really know what I'm good at.
Right.
You know, to ask a typical NLP question then is, if you did know, what would you say? You know, and then people come up with all sorts of answers. So I think instinctively we all know, at least by the time you get to the age of 20, 30, 40, 50, you've lived long enough, you've been exposed to enough to know what you are naturally good at and what you are naturally not good at.
I think what happens is that I think we become shy to say that I'm good at this, I'm good at that, you know, I can do this well.
We do become shy. And the other part of it, of course, is that perhaps we've tried it and we didn't do so well initially.
Right, yes.
We got negative feedback and then we became scared.
Yes.
Instead of just persisting and having that faith and belief in it that you could, if you persist, get better in this. But certainly also there's also a group of people who don't want to take responsibility, because when they admit what they are good at, is the responsibility to do it.
Absolutely. Okay, so get off your butt and get doing it.
Indeed, indeed. So, you know, it's all about then, what are your birth gifts? What are you naturally good at? Because whatever your calling is going to be connected in some way to your birth gifts. You know, mm-hmm. The spirit, divine, God, higher power, again, call it what you want, will mm-hmm. not call you to do something
that you hate.
About first equipping you
right.
with what you need to do that.
And I think
and
we're
a
going
lot of it will also come as you do it, of course.
We're going to love what that is, too, I think. We're going to naturally have an affinity toward it.
Oh, indeed. And that is the next one that we also then look at, and that is our enduring passions.
Uh-huh.
You know, what is it that just absorbs your attention? What is it that you are just so intensely, madly in love with that all you want to do is read about it, write about it, practice it, share it with others? I always ask people, if I could get you on the Oprah show next week and you could choose the subject, you could have any one message for the world, what would your message be?
Mm.
You know, mm. or if you're going to be on Dr. Anne's show or Larry King, mm. right? What is it that you want to talk most about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that certainly is an indication about what you are passionate about. If you walk into a bookstore, what kind of books, what kind of music, what kind of magazines are you naturally drawn to?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
Those are very strong indications of what that could be. So typically what I get people to do, Dr. Anne, is I get them to imagine five circles just floating in the universe,
uh-huh.
completely unconnected.
Uh-huh.
And those who are that is kind of a metaphor of what people are like who don't know their life's purpose. And then see these five circles really connecting with one circle in the center, a very soft, very gentle, but very powerful and omnipresent circle. And then four circles, one on the top left, one on the top right, one on the bottom left, one on the bottom right, intercutting, interconnecting, and they all connect, they overlap at the center, within that soft fifth omnipresent circle.
Mm-hmm.
Right on the circle on the left, all your gifts, your greatest strengths as you know it. And on the right, at the top right, write your passions, your enduring passions, things you are always interested in, always passionate about from the time you can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the bottom left, very, very important, right. What was your greatest pain in life? What is the greatest wound that you've been inflicted by life?
Hmm.
Where your greatest wound is or was, where your greatest pain was, that is the crucible of your message. That is the birthplace and the genesis of your greatest message. Because let's think of it this way.
Wow.
Somebody who was a drug addict or a workaholic.
Yes.
Is certainly well equipped once they have recovered to write a book about it, to teach about it, to guide, to help the next person who is now trying to recover and get through that. Where somebody who's never had that particular problem can certainly not have the compassion, the insight, the distinctions to truly help someone who is now going through it. It will be purely just be intellectual knowledge. It won't be
right.
real, authentic.
Yeah.
Experience-based knowledge. So for me, this is a very important one. This is almost our induction, where life, where the universe, God, spirit, induct us into our work. So we go through that pain.
Yes.
We learn the lessons, the spiritual lessons embodied in it. We grow as a result of that, and we grow beyond that problem. And now we look back, and we feel drawn and called to people who still have that problem, to say, I love you and I care about you and I know how painful, how terrible this is. Let me be your guide. Let me assist you. And your intention is purely from a place of love, of wanting to get them out of their pain. So this is a very significant one for me, even more so than your gifts and your enduring passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one on the right bottom circle is to really just engage your world and observe and look around you and see what are the things people struggle with most around you. where's the greatest pain, the greatest need? What are people's wants and desires? And once you look at all four of those, and you've listed them prayerfully, and you took time with fasting, you took time out in solitude, because this is really a process one do in solitude and ideally in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
I typically take people on vision quest into nature and wilderness fasting.
Oh, nice.
And that's where you typically do this. But you can do this at home in your inner room. It's no problem as long as you just have peace and quietness and some time, really. And then once you've listed these four different areas, look for the overlaps, look for the links. And there where you see a natural overlap between the pain that you had, the passions, the gifts, and the needs, wants, and desires of others. And with pain, you can even add your current frustrations or frustrations of others. Right there in that overlap, you will see your opportunity to serve, to be useful to your society, and to share yourself with other people, to use your gifts for the purpose for which they are given. And that is then for me the genesis of finding your life's purpose, your calling. But ultimately this need to be confirmed. I imagine, I believe, I trust, almost in conversation with the divine, with spirit, with God. So, you know, this model is very useful just to have some sort of intellectual foundation to it all. But I would not want people to use this model purely and exclusively to establish or work out or discover their life's purpose, because life's purpose or calling is something which is revealed more than it is discovered.
Mm-hmm.
It's more a gift when you're in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, please, people, listeners, do not just use this as an intellectual, analytical process. It's really in that relationship where you will just have a strong sense, a strong pull, a desire to do something. And God is the one who placed that desire, that calling, that in that compelling reason in your heart to draw you to something. And then your destiny partners will begin to appear, and this will begin to manifest then, and you will be of great service to others.
Mm-hmm.
And experience the joy and fulfillment that comes from this.
Mm-hmm. Talk about destiny partners. When you say destiny partners, obviously it's the people that are meant to be in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not sure how I came up with this. I believe it was just a gift, this whole concept of destiny partners.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, for me it is that in life we're all going to need help.
Right.
No matter how powerful, how influential, how wealthy you are, there's going to be a time in your life, I think what you so eloquently referred to as the dark night of the soul.
Uh-huh.
When you're going to need some help, and you're going to have to be humble and be willing to take that help, and often you have no idea where that help is going to come from, and you are crying out to spirit and saying, God, please help me. And then in God's time, not always instantly, the right people just appear in your life. They just suddenly, they are there. I can tell you of two incidences just in the last few months where unbelievable people just suddenly showed up in my life, and they were perfect. They were the most absolute perfect person for me, somebody that I would honor, somebody I would respect and take serious to give me advice, to give me an example, to open a door of opportunity for me to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two levels. The one destiny partner, which I believe is the ultimate, is the person who have the potential then, and I think that are predestined to be your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
That is the ultimate destiny partner, somebody who's going to walk this life path with you and share this life experience with you.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are also in the world of business and so forth, and specifically pertaining to your calling or your life purpose, destiny partners that will appear for a season.
Yes.
To help you to the next station, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
And then they've done their work and they will just fade out of your life. And then sometimes you will stand at the station and wonder, where do I go to now? Left or right? And just suddenly there's the next destiny partner.
Uh-huh.
That take you a few steps further on this beautiful, exciting discovery and journey, and empower you and help you and support you just to fly that little bit higher.
So I think
serve more.
I want to address the fact, you know, you said a little earlier that, you know, you put it out to Spirit and you ask Spirit for the signs, for this these destiny partners to come into your life, and then, of course, it's always on Spirit's time. And I have clients asking me the same question often. And it's like that time frame where you're sitting with a pregnant pause. There is nothing coming in. You're having to sit with yourself. And it can seem like an eternity. What do you do with those areas, that those times that you feel like you've been forsaken, you've been left alone, because they can sometimes go on for extended periods?
Oh, they can, and they are so painful, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
All you can do is just remain faithful in the fact that you have asked.
Yes.
And that you will receive in the right time. That for whatever reason, your time is not right as yet. You are not right as yet. There's perhaps still some spiritual issues you need to deal with, a lesson you need to finish learning first, some preparation to be done.
Uh-huh.
And all you can really do is just be patient. You cannot accelerate this. You cannot push it into creation, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a step of faith that it will be there, and you just have to keep doing your part. Keep doing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
Keep working as if everything depends on you, but at the same time, keep having faith as if everything depends on Spirit, because it does.
Mm-hmm. Having that faith and that trust is really key.
Indeed. And in the meantime, of course, what you can do is associate with the right peer group that will encourage you, edify you, support you, and further remain teachable, because there may be still things you need to learn. And, you know, just go with the process. You know, just don't give up on life at that time. This is not the time to create a situation of suicide, or to just drop out of life in despair or in a situation of depression.
Mm-hmm.
I often say to people, to heal your finances or to heal your body or to heal your soul or anything like that, you first have to connect with Spirit. So it's always first healing your soul, really, to heal your body or your mind or your finances.
Absolutely.
So really, just get more fervent in your spiritual path, in your spiritual devotion.
Uh-huh.
And that will then take you through this cycle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, thank you. In chapter 2, you're also talking about the mental development and how the importance of really absorbing, really what you're saying, you know, is building up your influence in the areas that you're most drawn to, and reading and reading and reading and gathering information. What do you say to your clients or maybe to our listeners who say, gosh, you know, I don't have time to do all of that reading. I don't have the time to read every classic book that's been written about this subject, or, you know, how do you carve out that special dedicated time for yourself?
And what the Daily 7 suggests is that you budget time for the 7 most important areas of your life. So, you know, when you budget your time effectively and honor that budgeted time or those time allocations, then suddenly you find you do have 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour, or even an hour for reading. But if somebody say, really, David, right now between kids, work, this and that, I just do not have the time. Most great books will at some point be available as an audio recording.
That's true.
And we all have to drive somewhere. And there's absolutely no reason while you drive, or you cannot tune into radio stations such as this and listen, why you cannot listen to those great recordings. If you're really committed,
that's right,
you will certainly find a way. So that should not be an issue for the real committed.
Mm-hmm. Now, our physical health and our fitness, it doesn't come by chance. Most of us work diligently at creating it. What recommendations do you have for, say, somebody that's overweight who really wants to make this change? They want to have that body that you've written about, you know.
Right. mind. Yes, in the book there's a little heading, Fat to Fabulous, right?
Yeah.
And so certainly there's a lot of overweight people in the world who want to be more fabulous in terms of their appearance. You know, the first thing I believe is that you have to create a shift in your identity, how you see yourself.
Mm.
And to create that shift in your identity, you're probably going to have to use something such as a swish pattern, which is very common in neurolinguistic programming.
Mm-hmm.
You could certainly use affirmations, incantations, declarations, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think what people need to understand is that, you know, I learned this from a doctor in Australia years ago, that genetics loads the gun.
Uh-huh.
Lifestyle pulls the trigger.
Uh-huh.
And so ultimately, it's your lifestyle that creates this problem. Too much stress in your life, incorrect food choices, too little physical activity or physical movement. And so you've got to take a long, hard, honest look and say, how do I create this problem in my life? Because you certainly do. It doesn't just happen. Right?
Absolutely.
But we are often not conscious of how we create this until we actually ask the question. Then I would also suggest that although diet or nutritional considerations is 70% of the look-good, feel-good equation, certainly make increased activity, some form of enjoyable exercise, your primary strategy. Because this will probably do more for you than anything else, because it's going to stimulate your lymph system. It's just going to improve your health and wellness all round, other than just losing weight. So also what people need to understand, Dr. Ann, is that what we want to lose is not just weight. We don't want to get on a scale and say, okay, I now weigh 10 pounds less. But maybe 8 of those pounds was precious muscle that you lost.
Right.
So what we want to do is lose body fat, unwanted body fat.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just, you know, weight in general. And that's what most people do. They do lose weight, but they lose very precious muscle. So set a goal. Say, got to first go and get your body fat assessed. Set a realistic goal. Do not try and do it too fast. Keep good records so that you have a graph or something to work from that's visual that you can stick on your refrigerator. Perhaps take a before picture, and if the before picture really is terrible, you can't even look at it. That's a fantastic before picture. You know, that's going to compel you. Stick it on your refrigerator where everybody can see you. You know, I'm kind of naughty, you know, living here in Florida, not far from Miami Beach.
Uh-huh.
I always say to people, listen, here's the reality check. Go stand naked or semi-naked
mm-hmm.
on a scale in front of a full-length mirror with bright light. And look at the scale and look at your image in the mirror.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's the question. If you appeared on North or South Beach, Miami, like that, would people run to you or would they run from you? You know, and people laugh and say, well, that's a naughty, bad kind of idea. But they definitely get the image. They get the idea. So, you know, just get very real with yourself. Stick that picture up there, you know, in a bathing costume or whatever on your refrigerator, and look at it and feel absolutely disgusted by it every morning and every time you open the refrigerator. That's a very powerful thing to do.
Yes, really.
Recruit a partner. Get somebody to get excited about you and with you about this to say, hey, you know what? We're both overweight. Let's form a pack. Let's be accountability partners. Let's meet 3 times a week or 6 days a week for a workout, or let's at least phone each other once a week and encourage each other.
I think a buddy system is really a good idea because
it
helps you to strengthen all those weak places. And when you feel like you're slacking, they can pull you back up again and say, come on, we have an agreement here. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
I love
that. Once a week and weigh each other and kind of keep a written record of what you see.
Absolutely. I'd love to have a workout buddy.
Well, we all need a great workout body, buddy, somebody to show us how to do new exercises, somebody to do the terrible ones with us, the ones we don't like.
Yeah.
You know, so there are many strategies that one can follow, but that would be some initial suggestions. So also when you do exercises, I highly recommend that you do movements that include full body range. In other words, in the book, for instance, I describe an exercise called Touch the Earth, Touch the Sky
mm-hmm.
on page 29, I believe it is. And this is a movement where you take, for instance, a medicine ball, a briefcase.
What's a medicine ball?
A medicine ball?
Yeah, what is that?
Something boxers use, you know, a solid ball that would typically weigh 8 pounds
okay.
or 16 pounds or so, just a heavy ball.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And but you could do this with a rock. You could do this with your briefcase when you travel.
Uh-huh.
And place your feet about shoulder width apart, your health permitting, obviously your knees and back and heart permitting, and raise it with both your hands from between your legs in one straight movement above your head as you inhale. And then just bend down, keep your back straight, bending your knees, and go all the way down to the earth. And therefore, the name touch the earth, touch the sky.
Yes.
You do 18 of those, and you are metabolically activated. Your heart's rushing, all your muscles are working. When you use a heavy enough weight, you will find that even your calf muscles are being activated as stabilizing muscles. Your abs are working. This is a fantastic exercise for your butt. I mean, really, to get your whole body in shape in the minimal amount of time.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to have to try that one.
You know, I do 5 sets
mm-hmm.
in, I timed myself just the other morning, in 93 seconds of total workout time. That's excluding the little rest breaks in between. So virtually in the time that your shower water warms up, you can do 3 to 5 sets of this 3 times a week.
Three.
And for minimal investment of effort, although it's a very intense exercise, and so it should be to get a good return on investment,
right.
You get tremendous, tremendous results.
Awesome.
Well, so, you know, and then in the area of nutrition, you also mentioned nutrition, right?
Yes, and nutrition is extremely important. Yes, let's go on to that.
Oh, it is. The one thing I would say is avoid extremes. Go for a lifestyle that is sustainable. So look for balance, look for variety, look for moderation in whatever plan you're going to choose to use. And certainly what I would highly recommend is that you increase your intake of raw foods,
mm-hmm.
that you increase your intake of enzyme-rich, organic water-rich, and chlorophyll, sun energy-rich foods.
Mm-hmm.
So things such as wheatgrass, barley green grass, those sort of things would be awesome. But, you know, also you've got to watch it. You don't just want a very, very high carbohydrate load. Carbohydrates are very essential, and I'm not for a low-carb diet at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you certainly do need adequate protein if your intention is to be in great shape in terms of visual appearance as we understand it in the West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want optimum health and longevity, then obviously, then, you know, the very high protein intake and so forth is completely unnecessary and counterproductive.
Right.
So it depends on your outcome, you know, whether you want to be in optimum health or whether you want to look as good as you possibly can. And I believe that we can integrate and find a good combination, a middle ground between these two worlds, where you look good and you are actually truly healthy, not just look good.
Right. Absolutely. That's a very good point, actually, to be able to have that balance. And there's so many fad diets on the market today that it gets very confusing for our audience, I'm sure, to know which way to go. So creating that balance is really important. I do want to let our audience know that I'm talking with David Fabricius, and he is the author of The Daily Seven, The Secret to Living a Life of Balanced Excellence. And in his book, you'll have 7 daily practices to help you achieve all you ever wanted without losing everything that you have. Let's take a look at chapter 4 in The Joy of Service, because this is really the biggest part of our day where we spend our time creating our life's work.
Of course. Justin, yes?
What would you say are the priorities in creating that balance?
I would love to share that with you in just a second, but maybe just quickly say on the nutritional part, for readers who and listeners who may become readers of this book, that the particular program offered in this book is with the intention to get people back into an attractive body state. In other words, it's got a lot to do about how you end up looking at the end of the program. So it is not the optimum plan from a health perspective. You know, so you would also see that I recommend a lot of fish and a lot of meat and those sort of things in there. Although meat is not listed in the official list, it does make a note there to say that if your pure intention is just to look good, this is the way to eat. But folks, be aware that you don't want to be on this diet forever. There is an even better way of living, and that is a more conscious way where you eliminate red meats, and some of those things there. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to place that in position.
Thank you. That's important. Okay.
Okay. So just to go back then to service, really, the joy of service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest part of our day, of all seven time allocations, is really this part of work. And just as a foundation to this, let me just say that if somebody currently listen and work 8, 10, 12 hours a day, and they cannot or do not make enough money working 8 to 12 hours a day, there is a problem in their life and in their business or in their career choice that an extra 2 or 3 hours of work a night will not solve. All the extra 2, 3, 4 hours of work a night is going to do is going to destroy their health and in the long run rob them of their family joy and possibly their family life.
Right.
So, you know, it's important to say, I'm going to commit myself to 8 or 10 or 12 hours of work maximum a day. Then I switch my cell phone off, then it's time for family or whatever other pursuits I have.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, do 3 things exceptionally well. Number one, every day, work towards creating and adding profound value for other people. What we talked about, this links in with your life's purpose. Look for the pain in other people's lives and then create a profound solution that will take them out of that pain and into a place of pleasure and happiness. And that should be one of your primary focus, is to give creative expression to your birth gifts. If you were born with the gift to sing, then sing. If you were born with the gift to teach, then teach. If you were born with the gift to paint, then paint, or write, or whatever it is. So definitely, definitely do not cheat yourself. Make a big time allocation each day to express your creative talents, but to create a product, a service, a solution that will help other people to get beyond their pain.
Mm-hmm.
As you do that, Dr. Anne and listeners, you will begin to generate income. There is going to be money there in this process, abundance eventually for you in this. But, you know, as a young motivational speaker, you know, I still hear young motivational speakers say this. We would say, find your passion and follow it.
Right.
Money and happiness will follow. And then sort of 10 years on the circuit as a motivational speaker, you begin to say, well, find your passion and follow it. Happiness and money will follow.
Uh-huh.
Mature and the order and sequence, the syntax change.
Uh-huh.
And the happiness, you now understand, is more important than the money.
Right.
And then finally, you hear the old motivational speaker say, find your passion and follow it. Happiness, money, and fatigue will follow. Because as you become good, as you get creative expression, people love to see people who wholeheartedly express their gift and generously share their gift, and people want more and more of you, and the demand for what you do increase. And yes, of course, your income increase with that, but be careful then, if you don't maintain balance, there's a risk of burnout.
Right.
So here's what you want to do next. A portion of your day, investigate and invest in real value created by other talented people who now passionately give expression to their talents. So you've got to be careful in the world of investments, but certainly you want to look at private placement memorandums, you want to look at initial public offerings, you want to look at other talented people, what they are doing. And where you see there's a great opportunity, you want to selectively and very carefully consider one or two of those to invest some of your earned money in for the sake of compounded interest.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the world of passive income, of reoccurring income, of royalty income, all those sort of incomes.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, income you don't have to actively work for.
Right.
And then the third part, as your wealth continue to increase, and even right from the beginning when you yourself are still struggling tremendously, and that is a season, and that's a season everybody go through and sometimes even go a second time through, and that is okay because it's only a season and it will pass. But as you are in that season, also the third thing you should give priority each day is to look for opportunities to take up the gauntlet, to take up the fight on behalf of the voiceless,
mm-hmm.
on behalf of the poor, on behalf of the oppressed, mm-hmm. on behalf of the widows and the orphans and the animals like you do with the dolphins and the whales, those creatures, God's creatures on planet Earth, who cannot fend for themselves, then use your influence, your beauty, your power, your strength, your access, your wealth, whatever you have, to be a spokesperson and an ambassador and a protector of those people, animals, and so forth, and to contribute in meaningful ways to increasing their quality of life.
Absolutely. It's vital, and it feels so good to be able to give back in that way.
Indeed. So if you can do those three things, if you can give creative expression to your gifts every day, if you can keep an eye open for great opportunities to invest in, and if you can make time to just share yourself selflessly with the world, with others, and make that difference, then certainly you have invested that day very, very well.
Absolutely. I like that a lot. And I also think it's important what you have written about giving 10% to charity from your earnings, and 10% to savings, and 20% to your investments, or more than 20% if you wish. And then the 60% or less of your total expendable income you can use to pay off your credit cards or to live on and to enjoy.
Sure, it's such a hard thing to do. And, you know, Dr. Ann, sometimes we do that and life storms come around and even wipe out those savings, those investments, you know, just don't pan out to be what you were hoping they would be. I see in the community where I live here on a beautiful golf resort, and, you know, my one neighbor directly across have a huge Hummer plus the latest Mercedes. He can't even park all the cars in the garage. He's got so many other cars and toys in the garage. The other neighbor across the road just have the latest Porsche and all of these things. And I go, gosh, you know, do we really need that? I mean, once upon a time, I fell in that same trap. And this is a trap we fall in the West. Mm-hmm. Of the latest, the biggest, the best, the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much like drinking seawater. You know, I sometimes in my seminars take seawater and I add extra salt.
Oh.
And providing somebody's health permit that they don't have kidney problems or something, I give them a little bit of this water to drink. And then I ask them, how do you feel after a while? They say, well, I'm thirsty. Mm-hmm. And I give them some more. And what happens? Their thirst continue to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole quest for bigger than the Joneses, better than the Joneses, faster than the Joneses, you know, the latest this, the latest that, is like drinking salt water.
Yeah.
Just increase our thirst for more of bigger, better, faster, the latest. And eventually it makes us ill.
Oh.
And eventually it can even kill us.
Kill us. Absolutely.
So it's a very vicious cycle we get on here in the West.
I agree. I see it all the time, especially in California. I mean, I was in L.A. for many years and saw it was rampant. And it is something you have to consciously pull back from. And, you know, now just looking at hybrid cars that are environmentally conscious and helping is a great... I mean, it's been difficult up to now because they've been so tiny and you can't, they haven't been very functional. But now even Lexus or even, you know, good brands are making these incredible cars that are going to help environmentally. So bringing your cost of those expenses down and also looking at things that are environmentally conscious at the same time.
I agree with that, and I can only encourage everybody to try and be as environmentally friendly as they can.
Mm-hmm.
I love the folks in Dallas. I do a lot of good business in the city of Dallas, and they're very kind and generous to me in Dallas. But I often, when I go to Dallas, I struggle a little bit with allergies there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I mention it, people would say, oh, you know, that time of the year, the trees. And I say, folks, which trees? You know, when I look around, there's like two trees. What I see is like a couple of thousand huge trucks.
Right.
You know, with all that emission, all that gas.
Yes.
And I say, shame, and you're blaming it on the two trees here. So I think, again, it's that reality check. You know, yes, I understand pollen and so on have an effect. But really, we are killing ourselves. We are destroying our world. And it's time that we are all more conscious of these things and make better choices.
Absolutely. Now, David, we have a little bit of time left, and I'd like to allow you to focus on what you would like to focus on. What would you like to leave our listeners with?
I would really just say to our listeners, folks, work as hard as you can to be successful. It's good for your family if you can provide a nice quality of life. But realize that there is more to life than just success. True success, the real definition of what true success is knowing your purpose, your calling, and fulfilling it well in your lifetime. That is true success. And along with that, the mature view of success includes a happy family. It includes good health. And certainly above all, it includes spiritual maturement and spiritual fulfillment. It is not just about access, influence, and power. I would also like to just quickly mention here, if I may, that one of the projects that's very close to my own heart right now is a program called Breakthrough, Balance, and Bliss.
Yes, definitely. Let's share that.
And, you know, be it my program or somebody else's program, expose yourself to an opportunity where you can do things that you cannot even imagine possible for you. Typically, historically in the past, I have included fire walking. We stand, jump, walk on broken glass.
That's amazing that you do that. Do people don't get hurt?
Thank God, no. Especially in America, they'll sue you, right?
And how do you do that? I mean, how do you jump on glass barefoot?
There's a secret to all of that, you know, and one has to experience it and be present to learn.
Uh-huh.
It's something I could teach you quickly just here on,
mm-hmm.
on a telephone conversation. But certainly, folks, when you break an arrow in your throat or you bend a steel bar between two people in your throat,
wow.
You punch through a stack of flaming boards, these are reference experiences for the rest of your life that redefine your potential. It redefines for you what you are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to have experiences like that that tell you, yes, I am indeed capable of more. Secondly, the balance part is really what we've been talking about here, the daily seven.
Mm-hmm.
Find a system, live by a system, commit to it, that allow you to focus at different times of the day on different vital areas of your life so that at the end of the day, or at least at the end of a week cycle, there is no neglect in any of the important areas of your life. In the long run, you will be glad you did. And then the third part, the area that we said in the beginning could create the greatest joy and the greatest excitement and passion, or the area that could create the greatest pain for us, this whole area of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to encourage each and every one of you out there to bring the sacred, the spiritual, the divine into your relationship.
Mm.
When it's man, woman, and spirit combined,
mm-hmm.
that becomes a very powerful bond. It becomes an unbreakable bond. The moment spirit is excluded from that relationship, the foundation of that relationship is weakened, and you put that foundation and that relationship at risk of breakdown. So include God, the divine spirit, into your relationship. And even into your sexuality, sex is a gift from God. And honor that as a sacred experience, as a sacred connection.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do, and you study the concepts, the philosophies that are already out there that exist on how to create bliss, how to live an orgasmic life, and where you and your partner can experience a soul orgasm, that is a beautiful thing, and that is something that preserves marriages.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that prevents the devastating breakdown of marriages. And I can only encourage you to take 2, 3, 4 days of your life, invest that time to embrace a process where you can learn how to create breakthroughs in your life, how to restore balance in your life, and how to bring more bliss into your relationship.
Thank
you. And if you do that, you will do well.
Absolutely. That is definitely a recipe for success. David, where can our listeners find you, get more information about your workshops and your book?
Thank you very much, Dr. Ann. They're welcome to go to my website, and it's continuously being changed and upgraded, so visit us often. It's obviously www.davidfabricius.com. And you're also welcome to go for the book to Amazon. It's published by Evergreen Press. And the ISB number, which is the one you need for an advanced search for The Daily 7 by David Fabricius, is 1-581-69-1939. And if you understood my West Texas accent correctly, then you should find that with no problem on Amazon.com, The Daily 7.
They'll find it, I'm sure. With your name and the title, they'll find it. And your workshops, what, I guess if they go to your website, there's all the information is there?
Yes, and as it unfolds, we will continue to leave opportunities on the website.
Okay.
But certainly, you know, just keep an eye out on our website, or just email me if you wish at david@davidfabricius.com, and we'll put your name on the waiting list for our next exciting event in either Jackson Hole, Wyoming, or in Hawaii, or, you know, some exotic and wonderful place somewhere in the United States or in the rest of the world.
Now, I understand you're going to be coming to Hawaii later in the year.
I certainly have the intention to do so, to take a group of special people to experience breakthrough, balance, and bliss in that beautiful part of the world where you are. Yes, Dr. Ann.
Excellent. So we have that to look forward to. Maybe when it gets closer, we can do another interview and let our listeners know about it.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, David, for the work that you're doing. Keep up the good work. And thank you for the interview and all this wonderful information.
Thank you, and wonderful rich blessings to you.
All right. Aloha.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.